in town. He had been planning and communicating. The smartphone was in a lab in the basement of the American Embassy in Milan, where, according to the latest from Whitaker, and they were talking every 15 minutes, the technicians had been unable to crack its codes. A few minutes after midnight, the two intruders next door evidently got tired of waiting. As they were making their exit, they spoke a few words loud enough to be recorded. It was English with a trace of an accent. Luigi had immediately called Whitaker and reported that they were probably Israeli. He was correct. The two agents were instructed by Ephraim to leave the apartment and take up other positions. When they left, Luigi decided to send Crater to the bus station and Zellman to the train station. With no passport, Marco could not buy a plane ticket. Luigi decided to ignore the airport. But, as he told Whitaker, if their boy can somehow buy a state-of-the-art cell phone PC that cost about $1,000, maybe he could also find himself a passport. By 3 a.m., Whitaker was yelling in Milano, and Luigi, who couldn't yell for security reasons, could only curse, which he was doing in English and Italian, and holding his own in both languages. "You've lost him, damn it," Whitaker screeched. "Not yet. He's already dead." Luigi hung up again for the third time that morning. The Kidon pulled back around 3:30 a.m. They would all rest for a few hours, then plan the day ahead. He sat with a wino on a bench in a small park, not far down Via dell'Indipendenza from the bus station. The wino had been nursing a jug of pink fluid for most of the night, and every 5 minutes or so, he managed to lift his head and utter something at Marco 5 feet away. Marco mumbled back, and whatever he said seemed to please the wino. Two of his colleagues were completely comatose and were huddled nearby like dead soldiers in a trench. Marco didn't feel exactly safe, but then he had more serious problems. A few people loitered in front of the bus station. Around 5:30, activity increased when a large group of what appeared to be gypsies came bustling out, all speaking loudly at once, obviously delighted to be off the bus after a long ride from somewhere. More departing passengers were arriving, and Marco decided it was time to leave the wino. He entered the station behind a young couple and their child and followed them to the ticket counter, where he listened as they bought tickets to Parma. He did the same, then hurried to the restroom and again hid in a stall. Crater was sitting in the station's all-night diner, drinking bad coffee behind a newspaper while he watched the passengers come and go. He watched Marco walk by. He noted his height, build, age. The walk was familiar, though much slower. The Marco Lazzari he'd been following for weeks could walk as fast as most men could jog. This fellow's pace was much slower, but then there was nowhere to go. Why hurry? On the streets, Lazzari was always trying to lose them, and at times he was successful. But the face was very different. The hair was much darker, the brown corduroy cap was gone, but then it was an accessory and easy to lose. The tortoiseshell eyeglasses caught Crater's attention. Glasses were wonderful diversions, but so often they were overplayed. Marco's stylish Armani frames had fit him perfectly, slightly altering his appearance without calling attention to his face. The round glasses on this guy begged for attention. The facial hair was gone, a 5-minute job something anyone would do. The shirt was not one Crater had seen before, and he'd been in Marco's apartment with Luigi during sweeps when they looked at every item of clothing. The faded jeans were very generic, and Marco had purchased a similar pair. The blue sports coat with worn elbow patches, along with the handsome attaché, kept Crater in his chair. The jacket had many miles on it, something Marco could not have acquired. The sleeves were a bit short, but that was not uncommon. The briefcase was made of fine leather. Marco might somehow find and spend some cash on a smartphone, but why waste it on such an expensive briefcase? His last bag, the navy blue Silvio he had owned until about 16 hours ago, when Crater grabbed it during the melee at Café Atene, had cost €60. Crater watched him until he rounded a corner and was out of sight. A possibility, nothing more. He sipped his coffee and for a few minutes contemplated the gentleman he had just seen. Marco stood in the stall with his jeans bunched around his ankles, feeling quite silly but much more concerned with a good cover at this point. The door opened. The wall to the left of the door had four urinals. Across were six lavatories, and next to them were four stalls. The other three were empty. There was very little traffic at that moment. Marco listened carefully, waiting to hear the sounds of human relief, the zipper, the jangle of a belt buckle, the deep sigh men often make, the spray of urine. Nothing. There was no noise from the lavatories, no one washing their hands. The doors to the other three stalls did not open. Maybe it was the custodian making his rounds and doing so very quietly. In front of the lavatories, Crater bent low, saw the jeans around the ankles in the last stall. Next to the jeans was the fine briefcase. The gentleman was taking care of his business and in no hurry about it. The next bus left at 6 a.m. for Parma. After that, there was a 6:20 departure for Florence. Crater hurried to the booth and bought tickets for both. The clerk looked at him oddly, but Crater couldn't have cared less. He went back to the restroom. The gentleman in the last stall was still there. Crater stepped outside and called Luigi. He gave a description of the man and explained that he appeared to be in no hurry to leave the men's room. "The best place to hide," Luigi said. "I've done it many times." "Do you think it's Marco?" "I don't know. If it is, it's a very good disguise." Rattled by the smartphone, the $400 in American cash, and the disappearance, Luigi was not taking chances. "Follow him," he said. At 5:55, Marco pulled up his jeans, flushed, grabbed his briefcase, and took off for the bus. Waiting on the platform was Crater, nonchalantly eating an apple with one hand and holding a newspaper with the other. When Marco headed for the bus to Parma, so did Crater. A third of the seats were empty. Marco took one on the left side, halfway back by a window. Crater was looking away when he passed by, then found a seat four rows behind him. The first stop was Modena, 30 minutes into the trip. As they entered the city, Marco decided to take stock of the faces behind him. He stood and made his way to the rear, to the restroom, and along the way gave a casual glance to each male. When he locked himself in the restroom, he closed his eyes and said to himself, "Yes, I've seen that face before." Less than 24 hours earlier, in Café Atene, just a few minutes before the lights went out, the face had been in a long mirror that lined the wall with an old coat rack above the tables. The face had been seated nearby, behind him, with another man. It was a familiar face. Maybe he'd even seen it before somewhere in Bologna. Marco returned to his seat as the bus slowed and approached the station. "Think quickly, man," he kept telling himself, "but keep your cool. Don't panic. They followed you out of Bologna. You can't let them follow you out of the country." As the bus stopped, the driver announced their arrival in Modena. A brief stop, a departure in 15 minutes. Four passengers waddled down the aisle and got off. The others kept their seats. Most were dozing anyway. Marco closed his eyes and allowed his head to drift to his left against the window. Fast asleep now. A minute passed, and two peasants climbed aboard, wild-eyed and clutching heavy cloth bags. When the driver returned and was situating himself behind the wheel, Marco suddenly eased from his seat, slid quickly along the aisle, and hopped off the bus just as the door was closing. He walked quickly into the station, then turned around and watched the bus back away. His pursuer was still on board. Crater's first move was to sprint off the bus, perhaps arguing with the driver in the process, but then no driver will fight to keep someone on board. He caught himself, though, because Marco obviously knew he was being followed. His last-second exit only confirmed what Crater had suspected. It was Marco, all right, running like a wounded animal. Problem was, he was loose in Modena, and Crater was not. The bus turned onto another street, then stopped for a traffic light. Crater rushed to the driver, holding his stomach, begging to get off.